Well, here we are on a happy day, the last daf of Eilat Dreifos. That's really something about Shana Zayin. Yesterday we got up to the first approach, how it is that we learn that the borot are considered to be okay for little animals that do not have simonim of kaskasim on them. So the approach was, clearly, and just to sum up, this is important to recognize, that the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel that we went through earlier, also with Klal Prado Klal Legabe, the dinim of the Chagavim, it was clear that he held that the Klal Kama is the Iker Klal, and therefore the Klal Abasra only expands what would normally be a Klal Uprat, which would mean that it would be heavily limited, and the only thing that we would be marba were things that were completely similar to the prat. The only reason that he was willing to go into the matir, the din of Rosh Aroch, was because he had the extra prat, which was going to be used as Imeno Inyan, which was Sol'am. And that would tell me, even though it was Rosh Aroch. The mandiyamar that we had yesterday, the Tana Devei Rav, who was not the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel, clearly the approach in the sugya was that that mandiyamar holds that actually, if we're going to read the dinim of Snat Pir v'Kas Keset and apply them le'iser in every place where it's bamayim, similar to yamim v'neharot, and then bamayim again, as though he was darshanin, even though it's not written that way. So according to him, if we hadn't had the tohu, the extra tohu, I would have said that even borot shifin u'me'arot are similar to charitzim and ni'itzim, are similar to yamim v'neharot. Even though they're obviously not fully similar, because they're still water, whereas the yamim and naharot are not only water on the ground, but they are also flowing water. Nonetheless, he would have included it in the klal prado klal. Now that's strange. Clearly, he does not understand klal prado klal the way that the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel learns klal prado klal. And instead, his klal prado klal holds that the klal of basra is the ikar. Meaning that you have normally in a klal prado klal a limited prado klal. So a prado klal would normally have acted to be marba everything except one item, which is the prado's maram is to, something which is as little as possible similar to the givens. So it's the thing that you would say is most unlike the list that is given to you. Then comes along the opening klal and says, now let's not be over generous with this. Let's not treat it as a being marva everything. Let's be mamayat a little bit to appear the same as the prat in at least some element of the prat, but not every element. Since that's the way that they learn the klal prado klal, in our case, where the klal prado klal is the list of where it would be usher, it's the list of where we need the simonim. So anything that's it's all similar to yamim v'naharot would require snapir v'kaskesef. That would mean that even the charitzim and the niitzim and the borot and the shikhin would all be in some way similar to the naharot. Yeah, it was washed out already. Thank you, thank you. While you're up, let me ask you for a check for $1,500, please. Karen YY for Lekavet Pesach. If it's possible, even if my wife is going, she would deliver it today. If maybe Barnea will come, I could get him to come over and to sign it. Oh, you need the second thing?
No,
you need to do it this morning. Ah, okay. Fine. Okay, wonderful. Anyway. So as you can see, the two approaches to klal prado klal that we've had so far are very different. Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel's approach would have used the klal prado klal in a very specific way, it has to be similar in every last way to the Pran, and the Tana Dvei Rav was using Kalal Protokol in a very generous way. Anything which is similar in any way to the Prat. Of course, in this case, the generosity turns out to be a chum, because it's defining where you need the snapir v'kaskeset. Now, the Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, of course, the reason that it in this case was not entirely generous in its iser was because we had the posik tochlu, which says, well, don't make everything aser, then why am I telling you it's a tochlu? All I had to say was, why did I say tochlu? Because I say at the end of the pasuk, tochlu. So, okay, so clearly, it's coming to add something. Therefore, in the end, we apply it in a more broad way than we would have applied it. Okay? Let me just point out that had we, in fact, learned that klal protokol the way the Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel would have applied the klal protokol, we would not have needed the tochlu at all. Because according to him, we would have applied the klal protokol as being entirely similar to the prat. Because he learns that the klal protokol is essentially a glorified klal of prat. Because he says the klal kama is the yikr. And therefore, I don't need the tohu, because the only things that need snapir v'kaskeset are things that are entirely similar to yamim v'ne'arot. So we would have had, according to him, an extra tohu. Is that clear?
What about the point yesterday that was made about the two claws? I thought it was said yesterday that they don't have to be so similar for television, but
here we're not talking about their being similar. We're talking about their placement, and that's a different issue. And therefore, today we're going to discuss what the Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, how they apply this tochlu, because according to them, lechora, there is no need for the tochlu. They should have to use the tochlu to be marba yet more. However, it turns out that the Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel holds that we are not dealing with the klal protokol here at all. Which is interesting, because they were the ones who said, let's apply, as Scott just pointed out, they were the ones who were more or less strict, anyway, to what defines a klal protokol. Because they said, even though the klal abas was not similar to the klal akama, you could still dorsh as a klal protokol, correct? By the case of Leminehu, with the various Arba and Fargo and so on. Yet, in this case, the Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel does not hold it's a klal protokol. Why is that? Because they do not agree with what was said in Eretz Yisrael. What was said in Eretz Yisrael was that where you have two klolim that are followed by a list of pratim, split the klolim up, and darshan is a klal protokol. So a kol echad ika trei klolim hasmuchi v'hadadi, hatel prat b'nehem, and dunam b'klal protokol, is what they said. Klal protokol. The Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel holds that if the Torah wanted to tell us a klal protokol, it would have told us a klal protokol. When it changes the order to make it klal, klal, uprat, it's telling you, do not read this as klal, prat, or klal. Instead, darshan it as ribuyim and miyutim. Now, there's a tremendous difference between looking at things as ribuy and miyut and looking at things as klal, uprat. If you look at things as klal, uprat, which is Rabbi Shmuel's general approach, as a matter of fact, it's Rabbi Shmuel who gives us the Midas Hatorah and Nedreshes in the Sifra that explains Klal Prado Klal. If you learn Klal Prado Klal, then what you're saying is that the details are definitions of the Klal, and they're meant to all be seen together. It's not that we have a list of different things. We have one statement that it needs to be understood as the interaction. It's sort of a dynamic relationship between generalities and details, which is very much what life is all about. Right? No. In all seriousness, in other words, the in general, this parallels the act of creation. In other words, you begin with a klal, in which everything is non-differentiated. You go on to differentiation, greater and greater differentiation. Then you reach a stage in development at which you have a reorganization, which is much more sophisticated now, in which, in fact, you could see how everything is interrelated, and it's in the interactions between them that interrelationship came about. So, in general, That's why Kabbalistically, creation is seen as klal prada klal, and the different dinim in klal prada klal define different approaches to creation as a whole. Here, we're not dealing with klal prada klal according to him, but with ribu miyute. Now, ribu miyute says that there's a certain level of looking at things in which you don't see their interrelationship. So that, in the one sense, the Torah is telling you to include, in another sense, it's telling you to exclude. The two don't explain each other. They're basically at odds with each other. So, in the one hand, you're supposed to be looking for what to include. On the other hand, you're supposed to be looking to what was not meant to be included. But not as a rule, rather as a specific. Therefore, the ribui, which says to be inclusive, is obviously the rule. And therefore, riba, mit, riba hakol, except for one thing. For each mit, there's one thing to be excluded. The one thing to be excluded needs to be logically defined as the least likely of things that you would have thought ought to be included. Okay. So now let's take a look in the Tanit Rabbi Shmuel today, where we're holding, one third down on the daf. Devei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, b'mayim b'mayim shtei pa'amim, if you list the two klolets, one after the other, ein ze klal prat. You can't read that as a klal prat. You have to read it as a ribo miyut. Therefore, the way to understand it is, b'mayim, the two b'mayims, consist of a riba. Ba'yamim u'banachalim consists of a miyut. B'mayim is now the indication that the ribui is complete, because of a riba. So we look at it as ribui miyut for riba is riba hakol. Now, assuming that we would be marva everything, that means we would include charitzim and nitzim as also being usser unless you have snapir v'kaskezim. My mi'et, the only thing that you should exclude is that which is totally unlike the yamim anarim, namely, borot shichinu ma'arot, where the water is standing still and enclosed. And therefore, that would be lehetera. Why say that? Why not say, if you're saying riba hakol, then even borot shichinu ma'arot should be osur. And the only thing that should be left to be mutter would be kalim. So kalim, I understand, if things grow in a container, and it's not on the ground at all, it's not connected to the ground. Now, there, I can understand the Torah says, well, you don't need snapir v'kaskeset and all of that. But if it's on the ground, even if it's not flowing, it should be. Isn't that the whole point of a ribui and miyut? Ah, true. But in kein tochlu mayahanile, what then would be the purpose of saying that extra tochlu, which clearly says to you, expand the heter rather than expand the iser? So it's telling you go beyond the given, which is kalim, and extend it one step further, even into borot. Now, this is next question is a question we never would have asked on a klal prada klal, as Rashi points out. The question is the epochana. Why not say it in the other direction? Why not say let's include the charitzim and nitzim? And include, I mean, Leheter, the Charitzim and the Yitzim, to be like Kalim, and look at the Borot and the Shekhinah Maharot to be like the Naharot. Now, that's insane. If you're actually Klal Prada Klal, you're looking to similarities. I mean, obviously, it's more similar if it's flowing and on the ground than if it's not flowing and on the ground. So we would never have said the Ebuchanah because that would be entirely arbitrary. But since the din of Ribu Yumiyuti is not predicated on the similarity to what's given, because there's no relationship between a klal and a prat, you have to say, well, I mean, this is more similar to yamim. That's not the point, that it's more similar. Therefore, you have to bring me now some element in which it's logically the more reasonable thing to exclude. You see? That's a whole different thing. So, therefore, I can ask, well, what is more reasonable about excluding the borot shikinu ma'arot from this general ribui of what requires snapir v'kaskeset, then excluding charitzim v'nitzim? So this way that it's phrased is absolutely mad for klal prada klal, but makes perfectly good sense for ribui miyut ribui. And as a matter of fact, it's a very good way to get straight the difference between them, the logical difference between them, how we're darshaning differently. So the Eichuchano, well, that's Kitatani Matatya. This is like the Brisa learned by Matatya Bar Yehuda. The Tani Matatya Bar Yehuda, my Ra'ita, the Rabot Borot Shechinu Ma'arot Lehetera. What makes you say that the thing that we ought to include in the Heter, the Tochlu, is the Borot Shechinu Ma'arot, and the thing that we mean to exclude, meaning, and to rather put it into the Ribui, and to say it's Osir, unless you have Snapir V'Kaskeset, is Haritzim V'Neitzim Le'isura. Well, because Marbe Ani Borot Shechinu Ma'arot Shein Atzurim Kekelim, Motziani Haritzim V'Neitzim Shein Atzurim Kekelim. The idea over here is that what we're looking to is something that has less access to the world. In other words, we're talking about something which whatever grows in it is viewed as holistically part of the thing. So if something is closed up in its own little universe, a kli, it's reasonable to say that's not part of the general standards of what you eat in the world. It's in a container. But once it's on the earth, it's part of the rest of the world. If the Torah insists on having snapir v'kaskeset, then you need snapir v'kaskeset. Therefore, that which would be most containerized, if you're going to tell me tohu, then it's the container aspect of it that's going to be important. And therefore, it's more likely that the bor, being a container, a cistern, is essentially a container, even though it's built into the ground, whereas ni'itzin and v'charitzin are open to things coming in, and they're notice that it doesn't compare it in terms of the flow to the naharot. You see, that itself is indicative that we're looking for a different standard. It's not the comparison, per se, that's important. It's rather the logic of it that's important. Now, according to Rashi, the bottom line is that the Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael and the Tana Devei Rav have ended up at exactly the same place. Just, they've taken completely different paths to get there. The reason that the Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael could not have taken the path of the Tana Devei Rav and ended up in the same place is simply because the Tana Devei Rav obviously was learning that if it wouldn't be for the Tochlu, I would have said anything at all similar to Yamin v'Naharot, even Borot Shechinu Ma'arot, would have required Snapir v'Kaskeset because they're similar to the Prat. But the Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael holds, wait a minute, what do you mean similar to the Prat? It has to be similar to the Prat in every way. Well, it's not flowing like the Prat, is it? So therefore, it wouldn't have been included in the Prat. Then he would have used Borot, Tochlu, to expand the Heter even further. And he would have had to say that Charutzin and Neitzim are also included in the Heter, you see. But since he doesn't see this as a cloud part of cloud because the two clothes are smuchis lahadare, he therefore, coincidentally, ends up in the same place because he darshed as a ribu miute instead of a cloud part of cloud. Tosus, however, points out that the very fact that we have standards that are different in the Eichuchano, Tosfos says, now look very closely at that. Why does it stress that the comparison is in terms of the similarity, not the similarity, but rather the atzira? Well, why the atzira in the Kalim? That's what bothers me. So therefore, he learns like this. The Charitzin and the Neitzin are not actually flowing. Charitzin, Neitzin, from a source. Flowing. They're not flowing. They're similar to Borot, Shechinu, Me'arot. But they're not Knusim in the same way. They're not self-contained. Because they're long and things get into them and so on and so forth. And therefore, even though these Charitzin and Neitzin are not Novim, that's why we're asking, so what's the difference between them and Borot, Shechinu, Me'arot? And we're bringing in this new idea that they're more Atsur, they're closed. And that's why a Mara is covered, and a Bor is a cistern, so it's more self-contained, in which case there's a big Nafkamina La'alocha, because the man of Darshans, Rav Tanavir Rishmol, Darshans Ribui, Miut and Ribui in this case, he would be Marbe, even Charitzim and Itzim that are not Novim, for Iser,
Whereas the man, the yom, the tana, the rab, who's learning as a kalal, prado, kalal, would have said, well, if the standard is flowing, then the charikim and itim that are not flowing are not included. So the difference in standards makes an afkamina la halacha, according to Tosfos. Because the standard of the ribui miut is a logical standard, which is self-containment, rather than a similarity standard, which is flowing. Okay? So there does turn out to be an afkamina la halacha between the two, according to Tosfos. By the way, these are serious halachas. We do not ignore these halachas. In practical halacha, we eat worms, bugs, and so on. And where it's very, very nogea, which is brought, always brought la halacha, is vinegar. Vinegar was once full of worms. I guess just the way it was stored and so on. It wasn't pasteurized or anything. Obviously, it wouldn't have become vinegar. So therefore, it used to be full of worms, and people were noheg to eat it without any questions. And that became, that minhag of eating the worms of the vinegar became central to defining the halacha of what is considered to be usur. Remember, I mentioned to you, we're going to get into it today, that it says of your adam shohei, you can bend over them. Well, wait a minute. I mean, you don't only bend over them. I mean, you take a serving spoon and you drink it or you pour it over things. And then what?
Were those worms, would it have been okay to scoop them out of the vinegar and eat your salad?
This is what we are about. No, this is not funny. This is very, very nogea. This daf is central to the whole immense worm bug scandal today, in which, which modern Jews have discovered that which ancient Jews never knew, which is that you're not allowed to eat any vegetables and so on and so forth because they're full of bugs. Somehow or other, nobody knew this. It's only after pesticides were discovered, and after there's hardly any bugs in anything compared to what used to be, which was, you know, full of bugs, all of a sudden now people are sensitive to a new issue of bugs that our forefathers never heard of, which surely is something that is very disturbing. And a lot of the reason for this is questions on this stuff itself, and which involves even things like flour. Are bugs in flour any different than bugs growing in water, for instance? Can you simply eat the worms in flour? And if you bake them into bread, there's no problem with it. Therefore, you don't need to check your flour. Things like this, which have become givens today, and are by no means given, as we will see as we go through this.
What about tequila?
What about tequila?
Yeah.
Well, all right, so we'll discuss that.
Really?
Yeah. Right. Okay. So now, let's take a look at the next piece. Oh, sorry. I was about to skip a. Sorry. Getting back now. Now this is just a question of phraseology. You remember we started the Brisa with those mysterious words. Hoel v'hitir b'mufurash v'hitir b'satum marshkish hitir b'mufurash v'hitir alakemun and so on and so forth. What is this mufurash and satum? I mean, I don't know. Anybody reading that pasuk? And yes, I'm a kid reading that pasuk. So which pasuk says that kalim are okay? Huh? But neither of them seem to say it until you look carefully. So which pasuk do you call satum, and which pasuk do you call mefurash? Therefore, the Gemara is just interested, like, hi satum, hi mefurash. And actually, plead you by Rav Acha v'Ravina. Chad amar yesh lo mefurash ve'ein lo satum, v'chad amar ein lo mefurash ve'yesh lo satum. Remember that we had two psukim, et zet tochlu mikol asher b'mayim, and then Kol Asher B'Mayim B'Yamim Ben Arot. So that was Kol Asher Lo Snapir V'Kaskeset. That's the Yeshlo Pasuk. Then we have the Isur. Kol Asher Ein Lo Snapir V'Kaskeset B'Yamim and so on. The Lo Tofeilo. That's called the Ein Lo. Okay? That's the Ein Lo Pasuk. Now, the darshaning that we did over here was on the opening verse, which is Kol asher lo, snap yivikas keset. And the question is, where do you need snap yivikas keset? And we did, b'mayim, b'yamim, b'manachot. So one man, the Omer, says, okay, and that's the pasuk that excludes kelim, because it says only b'mayim, b'yamim, b'manachot. Whereas the second pasuk doesn't exclude kelim, because it doesn't go through this whole klal, prado klal, or ribu yamiyat of yamim b'manachot. The other man, the Omer, says, no, interestingly enough, it's the pasuk in which Elo is Mefurash. Why is that? My time of the man, the Omer, Yesh lo Mefurash. What's the reason the man, the Omer, says, Kol asher lo snap yivikas keset? That's called the pasuk that openly tells you Kalim. Amalako, what do you mean? Obviously, maybe Nehu dekamishtaru Kalim. It's from that pasuk that we darshan that only yamim v'naarot requires snap yivikas keset, not kelim. And indeed, my time of the man de amar elo mefurash. So why should we say it's the other pasuk that's mefurash when it wasn't used for kelim? Because the high hudikamucha chayeh. Remember, the only way that we know that otam tochelo, which is mentioned in the first pasuk, those are what you're allowed to eat. The only way that we know that that doesn't mean only animals in the Yamim v'Naharot with Snapir v'Kaskeset, those you may eat. But any other animals in any other location, even with Snapir v'Kaskeset, those you may not eat. That was a possibility, right? And the only reason that we knew that that was not the correct possibility was from the second pasuk that answered only those things that are in Yamim v'Naharot. Now we understand that the otam techelu is motzi, the requirement of snapir v'kaskeset, from kelim. So that's really the basis of the exclusion of kelim, because it defines the word otam, those and only those, as opposed to kelim, rather than those and only those as the animals. You see. So since the imi ech, since from the first pasuk av amina bekelim av agav the itle nami lo techol, I would have thought even if they have snapir v'kaskeset, you can't eat them by very virtue of there not being a naharim, the naharot and the yamim. So therefore, I view that as the pasuk that defines the otam. Therefore, it's what tells me that you can be matir in kelim. And now, salad. Omer Abuna, lo lishpi ina shichra b'tzvaita b'urta, dilma parishli el mitzvaita v'hada nafi l'kasa, v'aviyover mishum sheretz hasharetz ala aretz. A person should not pour beer over the filter. Now, they used to use natural wood and straw as a filter for beer. There's always a lot of filt in beer. Remember, beer to them was date beer. And date beer has got a lot of worms in it also. The dates are wormy. And what they would do is they would let it gradually seep through a filter of wood and straw. And that way a lot of the foam and dirt was left behind. And they were left with a pure liquid. Well, don't pour it out on your tzvaita, the little twigs, biurta in the evening and let it sit there. Because dilma partially el mitzvaita, what might happen is that a worm that was caught by the twigs might have actually walked on those twigs a bit and became a sheretz hasheretz ala aretz, as opposed to being in its natural place of gidu. Once it leaves its little world and crawls on the earth, now if it falls back into the beer, it's awesome. And you will say good morning to the worm, and drink it down, thinking that it's in the beer. But it isn't in the beer. It's come from out of the beer. Right? Even though it grew in the beer, but now it has left its planet and it's gone somewhere else to be sure. We'll see, that's precisely how we look at it. It's very similar to Trephus in that, by the way, remember. That's where we go from here directly into Behemah HaMekashet, where a fetus sticks its hand out of its world and becomes now a trepha. Here, the moment the worm goes out of where it evolved, so to speak, in this little world of the beer, it now becomes a sheretz al haaretz. It's now where it doesn't belong. So here we're afraid give him a partial ailment spike. So you never know if it had gotten out on top of those twigs. But enough filicus, and now it falls into the cup underneath. And if you eat it, you're going to be over mishum sheretz hasheretz al haaretz. Ask the Gemara if that's the case. Yachav b'mona nami, duma parshla dafna d'mona v'adenach v'lamona. How do you know that if you put it into a cup, maybe the worm tried to crawl up the side of the cup? Once it crawled on the side of the cup and fell back into the beer, so it's now sheretz hasheretz al haaretz. Says the Gemara, no. Hasam hainu revise. The cup is still part of its world. So the edges of the cup would have still not made it asheretz asheretz al haaretz. Uminatem, no? How do you know you have a right to say that? Because we said before, minayin l'rabot borot shekinu me'arot, sheshochev v'shotem yemeinu nimna. How do you know you can put your head over a cistern and drink without worrying about it? Talmud lomar, tochlumi kol asher b'mayim. Well, why? Why don't you have to think that maybe one of these water bugs crawled up the side of the cistern and tried to get out and fell back in, and now you're drinking a sheretz hasheretz al haaretz? Ela hainu revise. Obviously, because you're ready to accept that the cistern is its world, even the edges of the cistern. So if that's the case, this is normal. This is the way that any self-respecting bug would live in its world. You know, you try to escape like Truman did, but you basically keep falling back in. So, okay, that's what it means to live in your reality. So, now again, the Mepharshim points out, the Poskim points out, that if the bug had escaped the edge of the cup and it crawled on the outside of the cup, then, of course, it's already gone out into the big world. Right? So, the question is, when, and this came to be the big vinegar question, if you scoop something out with a kli, then it could be that something was on the outside of the kli and crawled in, because after all, you did expose the outside of the kli to it. So how do you know that you're allowed to drink it? And so again, they're machalic simply logistically. In the same way over here, you are allowed to filter something in the bay. Right? It says only at night. Don't do it at night. So notice we rely on the fact that if something crawls out, you notice it. You don't have to worry that something crawled out. If it fell on top of a twig, and while the beer is still flowing, it then goes out, that's not called being sure it's outside of the beer. Therefore, here too, say the posting, you stick in something, a ladle, to take out the vinegar. So what are you going to say? That because for an instant something touched the outside of the ladle and so on, I don't see anything on the ladle. And as long as it's still in the vinegar and I'm moving, it's the same thing as doing this thing to the beer during the daytime. We're not toshish for that kind of thing. And that's part of the revise, is that something should go in a ladle. And for an instant, the ladle goes in, and now it's inside the ladle. That's all called ein revise. So we're not very makbid on that problem either. Omar le Rav Chista, Rav Huna, Tanya the Messiah, I think I have a brisa that proves that you're right. It says, Kol hasheretz al haaretz l'rabot yapchushin shesinanam. Now these yapchushin are the little water bugs that you find on top of wine, and you put them through a filter, and now you can filter out gallons and gallons of wine. You've got yourself a nice glass full of these things. Can you eat them? No, you can't eat them because you filtered them. Mashma halo sinanam, but if you hadn't filtered them, they would not have been included in the Yisr of Kol HaSheretz HaSheretz Al Haaretz. So you see that you are right. You don't have to be choshesh that something was parish and fell in. It's only now that you filtered them and set them aside. They grew, what do you mean? No. They're now in the filter. You want to take them out of the filter and eat them. But if you hadn't filtered them, there wouldn't be a problem. Now we get into a serious problem. According to this, if I pick a fruit and there's a worm inside, there's no need for me to check the fruit for worms. Because if there's a worm inside, he's a happy worm. This is his world. This is where he lives. He never came out to visit this vale of tears. And so therefore, what do you mean, how did he get there?
That's a good one up there. I think I'll throw out on that anyway.
What?
It's
a different thing. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
We'll see. So, according to this, there'd be no problem. You should be able to simply eat the fruit. So why would make such a big fuss about opening them up or checking them?
And get a little extra protein in the process.
That's correct. That's correct.
Would you check for wormholes? In other words,
store wormholes. Well, first, let's see what the issue is. Comes along Shmuel and throws a hatchet into this whole thing because it says like this: Akishuchi tliya b'ibeha. If you have a gourd in which it has now a bug that grew in it while it's connected to the ground, then even though the bug was in the kishut. But that kishut is viewed as just an extension of the earth. The only bugs that are kosher to eat are bugs that didn't grow on the earth. But if they grew while the plant was connected to the earth, then you're not allowed to eat them. Because then, for all intents and purposes, they're sheretz ha-sheretz al ha'aretz. Now that's terrible. That means you've got to start looking at your fruit. Leinu nisayeh, let's see if we can bring a riot to him. The Tani called one Brisa says ala aretz only bugs that are sure it's ala aretz to exclude the zizin that are found in the adashim, the yutushim that are found in the klisim, which is a different type of legume, the tolat that is found in the tmarim or in the grogrot, which are the figs, the dried figs. So here it's saying the pharish, it's okay to eat bugs in figs and dates. And adashim. All the things that we go crazy checking for. No problem to eat them. On the other hand, Tanya Edoch, the other Brisa says, Kol hasheret hasheret alaret lirabot comes to include the tolaat shebi ikare zeitim v'shebi ikare gifanim. Now, the Gemara at this point believes that ikare zeitim v'ikare gifanim means the fruit. The fruit while they're attached to the gifanim. Exactly. So apparently, my love, eat it apparently. Both are discussing worms found in a fruit. Vahavi ibeha, vahavi shalobi ibeha. The question of yours, did the worm grow while the fruit was connected to the tree, the gifanim? Or did it grow when it was already picked and then it started to develop and grew, in which case it's okay to eat it? In practical terms, how are we really going to know? And we'd have to check. So, in which case, Shmuel would be right. Habi Ibeah, Shalom Ibeah. Says the Gemara, no. There's no proof here to Shmuel. Ide, we're talking about Ibeah. It may well be that it is mutter to eat fruit with worms in it, even though it grew while it was connected. Velokasha, habi pira, habi ilana. In fact, one is referring to the fruit, and the fruit is a different world. And the other one is talking about something that grows in the tree. And in the tree, it's considered to be sheretz al ha'aretz. So you stick a straw into a hole in the tree like an anteater. You can't inhale and swallow all of those, suck up and swallow all of those bugs, because they were growing on the earth since they were in the tree. But if it grew in the fruit, Shmuel may well be wrong. And the mashmaut is here that we are doche Shmuel. In other words, and we're even going to bring a proof. V'dekanami, and I'll prove it to you. Diktani, tolat shebi'i kare zeitim, v'shebi'i kare gifanim, shemamina. Don't you see that the whole contrast is not the fruit, but rather in the roots of the tree? It's talking about the plant, not the fruit. So obviously Shmuel is wrong. Because if it was a reference, if the din would be that even if it was in the fruit, it would be usher. And that's something the Tanna should have told us a lot more than a guy making out like an anteater. I mean, that already is very nogea. Did it grow while it was on the tree, or did it grow when it wasn't on the tree? So apparently we're docha Shmuel. And indeed, as Tosfos points out over here, the Rabbeinu Tam, the Riva, the Rabbeinu Nisano, are armadiah from here that the halacha is not like Shmuel. Because the Gemara comes out with a shmanin hashalot to Shmuel. Now the problem is he brings the Shiltos of Rav Achoy, who paskins like Shmuel based on the Gemara that we had earlier about whether something can survive for 12 months and so on. What's the difference if it's time to cut or it's not time to cut? It takes over there. If you buy something that's already dry for 12 months, you couldn't have grown there because it would not have survived that long because it can't, it doesn't stick around for these little things for a whole year. You should be able to eat them according to this. So, okay, this is the mice in terms of the poskim, and it has a lot to do with our questions. So clearly, there was a minhag of Yisrael not to be makbid on these things. Nobody ever knew about checking, other than gross checking, that something shouldn't be, walking, directly, and you see it walking on your lettuce and so on and so forth. But the checking, until fairly recently, the checking to the extent of looking at things that, almost through a microscope, you're holding it up, and you're being ma'ayan in it, people would never makbid on. The same thing with all of these, the flower issues and so on and so forth. It's interesting that before he died, Reb Moshe put out in his very last, they just published not long ago, the last volume of his last Tshuvas, that people were spreading rumors, he said, in his name about all of these shilas that he had ossered them and so on and so forth. And he just wants to make it very clear, even though it's very hard for him to write now, and he's very ill, but he wants to make it very clear he never said any of these things. He never said that these things were usher. All he said was that he's too old to give a clear-cut psak on it, but that clearly there's many reasons to be malamit tzfus on those who are not makbid. Number one, something that isn't immediately seeable, that needs to be looked at carefully. Bechlal, there are many who learn that that's not considered to be a bug at all. It's not something that you see until you have you see a spot, so therefore it's a bug. You don't even know it's a bug until you sit there being ma'ayin. And that's what the Torah is referring to when it's talking about bugs. There are those who hold that. Has to be near la'ayin immediately as you hold it at a normal, same like an esrog. What's considered to be a gam in an esrog? Something you look at like this, like I do. Like a normal person, oh, it's an asterisk, it looks okay, looks okay. I mean, that's the shear of what is considered to be a predominant. That's because the Torah, when it speaks, we mentioned many times, the Divrei Torah Kol Hashem B'nei Adam, is what people generally would see without any kind of profound healing. Furthermore, there's the other issue, he says. The other issue being, and this is a heter that is mentioned by the Yerach HaShulchan, that this whole din that a live organism or a whole organism is never bato is not really true. It's not that it's never bato, but that it sure is bito is over 1,000. This is not feudal to Ella. But over Ella, it is bato. But that's not just a Lashon Gruzim, that's an actual din. And therefore, if there's 1,000 times more of a fruit than bug, then there's no problem in it because it's bottle anyway, even though it's a beer yet. So why there's certainly 1,000 times more flour than there is these little tiny things you can barely see in the flour. And then therefore there's no kashash. Furthermore, he says, there are those who hold that flour is like water. Now it's something that grows up in the flour is no different than growing up in the normal place where you have the water. And this is the Heine Ravise. And this is how we pass it. Certainly, once you bake the flour into a cake, everybody says, even those who are machmir, even those supposed to be machmir, are mekel when it comes to once it's baked. To look for it is one thing. To answer something when you didn't bother looking for it is another thing, which is very nagah. It's time to have to be machmir if you buy cakes. So how much do you have to be machmir on these things? In any event, certainly there are many, many reasons. And the way he ends up is he says, in general, on these things, it's very important to note the behavior of Am Yisrael through the Derech. Because to create new issues, because there's so many tzadim of the Magna Paiskim, this is the way that we were always naive. If this is the way we were always naive, then even though there may be a machlokas here and here, the way to look to be machria, how to act, is by looking at the way people acted. That is the way we acted. To be mamti is the very word he uses. To be mamti, new ideas and a greater level of hakbadas. Says that that is not something that he himself would ever have written a tshuva to do such a thing. So that's as far as he wants to go in terms of the master. More of a limud source. But, one should never quote him, is what he's saying, to say he asked it. That's how it certainly didn't do. And now we have to determine what is considered to be a sharetz al haaretz. How much out of its world did it need to go? How about if it just poked out its head, looked around and said, never mind, and went back inside? Is that considered to be sharetz al haaretz?
Got to go to university and get a degree in a BA in Shrutzut.
No, the question is, does it, would a whole already be an indication?
Yeah.
Is the whole in or out? That's
the
question.
Is
it the ingress or the exit? So that's always the big question. But it's interesting that blessed is never the question. We're not interested in the least about your blessed response. Blah. That's not the issue. If the pair was matir, so there's not even an Indian in the report that I did.
No.
I was more for that. That's it. The early bird gets the worm. That's the thing. What are these desires of it? No, so there wouldn't. That's what they were medayek. It doesn't say nefesh hayach. It says that ino koshish. So, boy, Reb Yosef. Question is: suppose Pirshah, suppose a worm crawls out, looks at the world, and promptly has a heart attack and dies. Amazing. So it never had a chance to crawl around on the world. It was over before it started. Ma, what's the difference? How about mitzata mao? How about if it just looked around and then, never came out completely? So you find the apple with the worm still looking around. And how about lavira olam? How about if it crawled out of the apple, was on its way down to the earth, and then akuna matata, you opened up your mouth and plop. Eat it as it's falling. So it certainly couldn't have been. It couldn't have been walking around, but it could have walked around if you hadn't gotten in the way. So the question is crawling directly into your mouth from the Avira Oila, what's the din? Take it. Now those questions stand. Boy, Ravashi, Legad Tmara Mao. How about if this worm discovers space travel? It cuts out to the top of its date and looks around at the universe. How about if it doesn't get that far, but at least it gets into the atmosphere? It escapes the inner shell, which is the garin, where it usually will grow, and the area around, right around the garin, has that little, thick membranous. That's where it usually grows. It gets to the top of that, but it's still inside the tamar and never escapes the solar system. So how about there? Ma, table. It's also a question. On Rav Sheshi's bread would be the kukiani asiri. Kukiani, which are worms that are found in the liver or in the lungs, those are also my time, mi alma also. They're also to eat them. We're not up to that. We're up to the bandyama, it's also my time, mi alma also. They have invaded the body from outside, they crawl in. While they're already formed. If that's true, why don't we find them in the animal's rectum? You're claiming that they're crawling in from the outside. We should find them sometimes crawling in from the outside. We never do. Now others say just the opposite. Rav Shisha Bar Ravidi said kokiani are mutter. Why are they mutter? Because b'nei gavle. They obviously develop inside the animal. Omravashi, Shita, must be that they are inside the animal. Dima Almakaza, because if they would be coming from outside, Lishtak Kuderach Beit Harei, why don't we find them in the rectum? Even though we do not find them crawling up the animal's rectum, my time, actually where they come from is through the nose. While the animal sleeps, they invade the nose. Actually, this is pretty common. So the tola'im get in to the through the nose of the animal. And then they crawl into the lungs and they expand through the lungs and so on and so forth. Now, the tola'im, which are the darne, this is why I never go to that restaurant called Darna, because it means worms in the, it's unbelievable. Worms in flesh are called Darna in Aramaic. And these idiots went and called their restaurant the Darna restaurant. I mean, every time I see the sign, I get sick. So, darne de bisra, so the worms in the bosa, are usser. But the kavre sharia, worms found in fish, are mutter. Now these worms of both are found between the skin and the flesh. We blot the skin. We know that there's major problems with fish. The big scandal with the carp, that they were filled with these worms. And there indeed the worms would come in through the nostrils. You don't remember this? Oh, this was major. And they got into the head. This was like the big thing. You couldn't buy carp for years because they ended up. Oh, recently there was another. Oh, okay. So this used to be a major, major problem.
When did they go in? After the carp was dead?
No. While the carp was alive, and we'll see what the problem is. Now here it says that kavre fish is mutter if it has these worms in it. And indeed, many of the chumas that were written about the carp problem held that it was mutter because of this issue. This went all the way back to the time of the Chazon Ish. There were discussions about this, whether these were called darne de kavre. It's fascinating what the nafkamina is between them, as we'll see in a minute. Omer la Ravina la ime. Ravina told his mom, and his mom used to sit there trying to pull out the worms before she fed it to her son. He said, look, Ivlali, just want to make a filter fish, and I won't see them, and then I'll eat them. As long as I don't see them, I'll be able to get it down. But you don't have to go to so much trouble. This is where a filter fish comes from. You know? So don't go to so... So it would be mutter then.
They reproduce within the fish.
Yes, inside.
So that was a new.
We're going to talk about this. Amalek Meshar Shebreder Vachlorvina. My Shnomi Adatanya. I don't understand. Why was he allowed to eat the worms and the fish? If it says in the Brisa, the et nivlatam tishakid, so l'rabotet adaranim shebeveima, you should be mishaket in a veil of animals. That would include the worms that are essentially in a veil. Omar Lai said, what's the matter with you? Don't you understand the difference? It's no comparison. A behema becomes mutter b'shchita. So even though these things are part of the behema, did you ever shech them? They don't become mutter b'shchita. So they remain usher, incredibly, not because of sharet ha-sharet ha-la'aretz, but because of Abram and Asai. So according to this, a goy would not be allowed to eat them, because they're not usher for sheretz ha-sheretz ha-la'aretz. But a fish doesn't require shechita. So the same way you could swallow the fish live, you could swallow its worms live. So even now that you've prepared the fish, what's the difference if the worms are still alive? totally different way of looking at it. So therefore, the behemoth b'shvita who the b'misharia behind him in the loka mahanyalei shvita. Since shvita doesn't help on worms, so be yisurayu kaimon. You're left with the issue.
Why is this commandment trying to shock the worm?
Yes, we're looking at it as part of the natural animal. We're saying haina revise. Then we're saying it's part of the animal. The problem is, it's not part of the animal that became mutter b'shvita. That's the problem. Havel dagim, since dagim are mutter ba'atifa ba'alma, just gather them and eat them. Sahani kika gavla. So now that I'm mixing them up, now they grew in the fish. Bateraka gavla, they grew and reproduced in complete hatter. And therefore I can eat them. Tanya Rabbanan. It says, Kol Holech Al Gafon. So Holech Al Gafon, what slithers about on its belly? That's enough hush. Kol Holech Al Gafon, that includes worms of all different types. And also, they may not slither just as well as a nachash does, but they certainly go on their belly. So that's l'rabot et ha-shulshul. The shulshul is the earthworm, the long earthworm. Bet ha-domel ha-shulshul, anything that gets around like that. Ha-kol ha-lech, then it says al-arba. So the al-arba refers to akrab. Kol ha-lech includes even the chipusit, like a cockroach, a beetle, and anything similar to it, a domela people see. Marberaglaim. The marberaglaim refers to centipede. Ze nadal, Rashi says, mea raglaim, which is centipede, 100 feet. Nadal, and that's a nadal. Adko means until whatever. The rabbi says, a domela. In other words, anything buggy is the idea. Tani Rabbi Yosef and Rumaski Sarmer, actually, the Leviathan is a duck Taharu, even though it's called a Nachash. It says Leviathan Nachash Bariyak or so and so. Mashma, that it's Tame. Actually, it's Tahar. No, not true. It's very interesting that the Medrash says Farish is not kosher. And the Shor HaBar for sure isn't kosher. It's not checked properly anyway. And that latid lavo, part of the schar for shmiras and mitzvahs is that you don't have to keep kosher anymore. Amazing. But anyway, for those who don't trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu's meat, the Leviathan is kosher, and shenemar gava pikei miganim taktav chidudei cheres. So, afikei miganim. What is miganim? Miganim is armor. Ah, that's kafim. Armor is the scale. And that's the katkafim shabbos. When it says taksat hadudei cheres, it's something as a sharp piece of broken, shattered pottery. Ah, that refers to the snapirim, with which it has to cut through the water. That's the snapirim, that's koreatim. That lets him fly through the water with the greatest of ease. Hajjun Allah, Elo Trey, Post! In modern Hebrew, they use it because it means a big fish, they call it a whale. Who knows? In the Medrash, it says, Miss a Nifos. We've got time. It's not a fish you're going to see. It's a creature that does not reproduce and doesn't have a female, and it only lives at the bottom of the sea. And then it's all over. It's going to be over as man above the Kabbalah. Oh, no. We have to say the first few words. Neima hamekashele leida. Neima is having problems giving birth. And the fetus is motzi es yado and brings it back in for some more relaxation. Let the mother do all the work over here. Mutar ma'akhila. You can still eat the fetus. And we'll see. What about that? We'll talk about tomorrow. Yes, we'll be doing that. That's a mythical fish. It's not a big fish. It's a fish that is. It's something that has lived from the time of my separation. Without a meat. Right. It's not an animal that's part of our zoology, obviously. It's like the cherish and the mythical animals that the Gemara speaks about earlier. Tabi the main lawyer.
Tell us some folks around Pasha,
they really got around to it. This would suggest that it was one of the people. Well,
Well, well no, 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 no. Van Aden is not part of not part of history. But the Leviathan did originally have a main character. Yeah. 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 The
book was checked.
Checked it. It's all
that is the most disgusting
thing. Put it away with Sadiq
and
Latin Lavo.
And everybody's laughing. It's the most popular show in
the world. So are we okay with tequila?
Ah, right, yeah, let's talk about the tequila issue. So what's the deal on the tequila?
Tequila, there's a worm in the bottle of the bottle.
Right, but that worm was taken out of...
I don't drink tequila.
I think the real tequila, the worm grows in it, and that's the proof that it's real and that it's fresh. Yeah. But this... Right, but I think this is a fake.
It's alive.
This tape, I think they take this from somewhere. But it could well be.
Cobra. Cobra grows in the bottle of alcohol.
Cobra?
Cobra.
A cobra snake?
Yeah.
Grows in alcohol?
Well, it dies eventually, and you do there.
But they put it into it.
They put it in. Right, they grow in it.
But these worms grow in the tequila. It's made out of what? It's not pineapple, is it?
No, they introduce it.
I thought that it actually grew there.
Well, yeah, but...
It's some kind of fruit in the area that they use for tequila. I forgot what it is.
It's mugwort plants.
It's cactus. Yeah, that's right.
Mugwort.
So it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be natural. I mean, it was.
What they do is they put a cactus piece in there and it grows out of the cactus.
Apparently, that's what the. I mean, that's how the whole minute came about.
I don't know if they got one in there.
Yeah, you never know.
Also, a lot of these worms, they are taken into the body through as an egg. Now,
yeah, but that doesn't matter.
That wouldn't change its status. In other words,
eggs don't exist.
Eggs don't exist in terms of...
In a larger term. Right.
They have these television programs now where they're feeding everybody worms and cockroaches for $50,000. They give you an opportunity...
$50,000
if you'll do whatever they tell them to do. They have these pretty women and young men, and they bury them in their coffin sometimes. And one of the big things is they take a fistful of worms and eat a whole bag of worms for $50,000. And people get sick and stuff. These are the most popular shows on television. It's approaching Thanksgiving, so you know, you're getting closer and closer to the one.